All right, well, thank you all for coming. This is the Voice Interaction Design talk. And my name is Meg Nyman. I'm a senior user experience designer within the Bing team. And I've been focusing on speech for the past 8 years. So I've done a number of different speech design things and speech design interaction, everything from Windows Phone to Xbox to IVR systems. So I'm here to talk to you a lot about design. And my co-presenter is Jay Waltmanson.
Hi, I'm Jay. And I've been a program manager about 8 years at Microsoft. Focused on a range of speech technologies, and I'm also a linguist, if you guys are interested, and a joke teller, too. But today we are going to talk about some of that, and Meg is going to focus more about an interaction paradigm that you can think about that end users can use to have useful speech interactions. Then I'm going to talk about some considerations that you should think about before you start coding to ensure some of those successful interactions. As a heads up, there's not going to be a lot of coding in this talk, so if you're interested in that, you're not going to find a whole lot of that, but there is going to be a lot more design in terms of how you go about ensuring that interaction. So as Meg mentioned, we are part of Bing, and so there's a whole bunch of new announcements that have come to light around Bing, a lot of new capabilities that are being talked about this weekend from OCR and Translator. There's also some new maps controls, and you're going to start seeing a whole lot more stuff coming through a unified Bing developer portal in the near future. One of those things that they've announced is an upcoming speech control for Windows 8.1. And so keep in mind, you can keep that in mind in terms of some of what we're going to talk about today. And specifically, we are going to focus on speech. So that would be the capability there.
Cool. So to get started, who out there has actually made a voice app? I still have content for you. And I hope that the rest of you are maybe considering making a voice app or adding speech to your experience. If you've already done that, then this will be a great chance for you to see sort of how well you might follow some of the things that we have in here in terms of best practices. And then also for a V2 or for your next application, hopefully this will give you some good ideas about how you actually would think about starting to put speech into your application from the beginning. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is when speech is useful. So we're going to talk about the scenarios and the situations where speech really lends unique value and how it might be different than other modalities, where it might play really well. I'm also going to introduce to you a speech interaction framework, and I'll get into this, but this is something that takes, it basically encapsulates all the speech thinking that we have on our team, and we have a lot of years of experience designing speech experiences, and we looked at good ones and bad ones, and we basically said these are the components that are needed in order to have a really great usable speech experience. So I'm going to show you that and walk you through that, and then I'm going to hand the reins over to Jay, and he's going to give you some considerations to think about before coding. So all of this is really from the perspective of, you think you want to put speech into some experience, how might you actually go about thinking that all the way through to ensure that you have a usable experience? And when I talk about design, I mean design in the broadest sense. So I technically am a designer, but I would consider everybody here a designer. We all are humans. We all have an idea of what people want to do. And certainly, as developers, you're also designers, both from the front end side as well as from the back end side. So I'm really meaning that in the broadest sense, and really encourage everybody to sort of think about these things, because if we're all thinking about where speech can lend value, then we can deliver some really great applications. So when is speech useful? Well, I have more questions. First is, where are your users? Because that's a good way to figure out whether speech is going to lend value. And they're out in the world, right? Any application that we make, from a directory assistance application, from a calling application, from a texting application, to a gaming application, is all a means to an end. People are trying to do something. They're trying to call somebody. They're trying to have fun. So our applications are really the intermediary that goes between the user and then their end goal. And so if we think about that and we think about their situation, we can also think about the fact that people are trying to get places and they're trying to do things. So how do we take all of that into context when we think about the features and the pieces that we want to put speech into? And so one of the ways that we tend to think about speech is, you know, what are the physical considerations that would really make speech valuable? And one is that I need another arm. So if I'm driving, I have two hands on the wheel, and I drive stick shift, so I've got one hand here and there. I don't really have another hand to be playing around with my phone, right? And so if I can use voice as that third hand, that's really valuable. Similarly, if I'm carrying groceries, or if I'm just in some other situation, even if I'm on my computer and I'm typing away, that can be a place where speech can lend value. There's also times when speaking is just easier than typing, and that can be based on the constraints of a keyboard. We've all gotten pretty good at virtual keyboards, but they're still tiny, and they're not as good as, you know, regular sort of typing keyboards. And so speech can definitely be valuable there. And then there's also just situations and scenarios where speech is just going to be easier than typing. So think about that. If it's easy to say, that might be a chance for you to use speech. And so actually, I'm going to show you a quick demo here. So this is something that I do all the time. Text Liz Moore.
Texting Liz Moore. Say your message.
I'm running late.
I'm running late. You can say send, add more, or try again.
Send. Oh, lovely. We don't actually have a cellular connection. So we did all that over Wi-Fi. So that's a situation where when I'm driving, it's just really great that I don't have to pull out my phone. And in fact, with cars that have Bluetooth enabled, we have all of this. Plus, when you're if you have a text message that comes in, we ask you whether you want to read it or not. It's a really good instance of using that sort of hands-free use of my phone because my hands are busy doing something else. Related to that is attention. So if my attention is on something else, if I'm walking or I'm driving or I'm riding a bike, then that would be a case where speech might be valuable. And in fact, that texting scenario I used yesterday as I was walking out of here, and I was trying to figure out how to get out of Moscone and how to avoid all the different people, and I was running late. So I didn't really have time to be like stepping aside to use my phone, and I just used speech, and it worked great. So that's another consideration, is if it's really quick to get out of my head, then I may just want to say it. And so if it's a quick task, like making a note, that's another case where I don't necessarily want to figure out where OneNote is on my phone and go in there and then start typing. I can just say, note, buy bananas at the store, and I can be done. So think about that in terms of where you might want to use speech. And one of the things that we do on our design team is we actually sometimes just play around with that a bit. And we will pretend that we have more speech functionality than we do. And we go out into the world and we start thinking about, when do I want to talk to my phone? So you can do it with your app too. When in your app is it a place where you really want to be able to say something? That could be a really good situation for you to be adding speech. And so there's an application called Hey DJ, and we have a coworker that uses it all the time. He bikes to work, his phone is in his bag, and he's able to use his Bluetooth headset again, tap the button, he says, Hey DJ, surprise me, and it plays lots of different songs from the playlist that he has on his phone. He can also direct it and ask for a certain artist or an album. And so again, this is just really quick, right? I know what I want, I can say it, and I'm going to say it and get it using the speech functionality that we have on the phone. The other thing is, what do your users want to do? So there's the situations when speech is going to be valuable, and then there's the scenarios. There's the things that people are trying to get done where speech could really be of value. And so those are a few different things. One of them is that you want to jump into an experience. So, you know, if I want to play Michael Jackson, I don't really want to remember whether it's under M or whether it's under J, and I just say, play Michael Jackson, that would be lovely. Also, if you have a really big data set, so if it's a local search problem or if it's your context list, you know, find coffee in San Francisco is really easy to say, again, and it jumps me into whatever that massive database really is, directly into the piece that I want. And then if it's fewer steps to speak, so call Liz Moore Mobile is 3 pieces of information. I said it very quickly. In order to find it on my phone, I have to go through a number of different button presses to get there. And I've got one more demo for you. And this is actually an app called Cocktail Flow. And I'm going to speak about a few different apps throughout here, and that's not to endorse any one particular one. These are just examples of people who've been playing with speech, who've been trying to use it, and they can illustrate some of the points that I have. So that's how I picked some of the ones that I have in this presentation. So Cocktail Flow is this cool application. It lets me learn how to make different drinks. And let's say that I wanted to make an old-fashioned. Well, if I were in the application, you know, maybe I'd go to All Cocktails. I'm not even sure what's in it. I don't know what the base liquor is or anything. Well, if I start scrolling through here, like, it's going to take me a while, right, to get to O for old-fashioned. Instead, from the very top, I can say, Cocktail Flow, old-fashioned.
Showing old-fashioned.
And then there it is, right? So Sure, I'll take an applause. Cocktail flow will take applause. But I mean, I named it, I said it, and I got there, right? And so this is another case where, you know, the UI that Cocktail Flow has, by the way, is great. Like, it's a really great discovery app. So I'm not saying that what they have built there in terms of their touch has any problems with it. But this is a place where voice really is valuable if I know what it is that I want and I can just say it, right? So you can think about that, too. I'm not trying to eliminate other modalities. It's saying, where can speech add on, or what are the tasks that are really good for speech, and what are the other tasks that are really good for another modality? And so, in terms of when speech is a good idea, there's the antithesis, right? When is speech a bad idea? And so these are sort of the anti-patterns, and they sort of follow against what was good, but there's some other nuances in here that I wanted to share. And so we'll frame it in the same way, right? One is like, when is the situation just not the best for speech? And there's a few of them. So precise control is one. I don't want to really say next, 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 up, 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 right? It's repetitive. It's a lot easier to press a button or to flick a screen than to try to do that with my voice. If it's also more difficult to speak that item, so URLs or usernames are things that weren't necessarily meant to be spoken, so trying to speech enable something that isn't meant to be spoken can be really difficult, especially if you've like substituted one for I and all that kind of stuff. And letter recognition isn't the greatest. Like, we as humans have trouble between B and D and M and N. My name is Meg Nyman. It's a disaster every time I try to call someone and authenticate myself. And so, you know, that just isn't the best use. There are a lot of other places where speech is going to shine more than trying to do that kind of thing. And then your environment might not be good for speech. So Cocktail Flow is really great if I want to learn how to make an old-fashioned before people come to my cocktail party, or if I have a really small cocktail party. But if I'm in a bar, then I'm probably not going to use speech, or it's probably not going to work that well. So just consider that. And it can be that people are in different situations with your applications for different reasons, and they may use different modalities.
It does work well in a bar, I can attest.
And then the last one is about privacy. And this is just to say that even if somebody's in a locked room alone and it is a private space, there are some things that people just don't really feel that comfortable saying out loud. So social security number is one. There might be other instances like that. So just yourself feel it out. Ask somebody else to try it. If they're like, oh, this feels kind of creepy, probably not a good idea, right? And then there's the actual implementations. So if you ask people to speak unnaturally, and that can be a lot of keywords strung together, that can be putting in extra syntax that just doesn't feel the greatest, sometimes there's reasons and there's technical constraints for you to do that, so I'm not saying that you can always get around this, but play Michael Jackson is better than saying play artist Michael Jackson, right? So just think about if there's ways that you can be clever in the way that you've implemented your design, that you don't put that burden on the user to do some of that managing of grammars and things like that, and Jay will talk a little bit more about that. If it's unclear what I should say or can say, like, that's also not fun at all. Going fishing for speech commands sucks, because there's a lot of different words in the language, and there's a lot of different ways that you can say lots of different things. You know, we all probably have a few different ways that we would talk about a particular task. So you really want to make that clear to users from the get-go, what they can say and what's going to work. And then if users don't understand where speech works and where it doesn't, and it seems like it's just sort of haphazardly applied through your application, that can also be a barrier for people to use speech, because they don't feel confident. They don't feel confident on any given screen what's going to happen. And so again, I'm not saying that you need speech everywhere at all, but maybe your top screen always has speech, or maybe all of your text fields have speech, or maybe you only use speech for search, and it's very clear when you get to the search screen that that's where speech is going to work. So just have some sort of logic and some sort of general idea of how you're going about doing it, and then users likely will pick up on that even if they don't, you know, explicitly understand it. We sort of notice those patterns implicitly. And then if it takes multiple steps to get to speech. So, you know, speech is really valuable to cut through menus, so if it's three levels deep, then it may not be that valuable because I've already gone through a lot of effort and I probably had an alternate path that might have been just as fast. So I'm not trying to contradict what I said before, but putting speech at the top is really a place where you're going to get the adoption. So if you're going to go through the effort of doing it, think about at least putting it in a really prominent place that people can get to quickly. And Jay's going to talk to you a little bit more about that, but you just saw me use a lot of speech from the very top of the Windows phone, from that start screen. And so that's a place that you definitely can play in, and a place where speech can really be valuable. And so transitioning from all of those situations and scenarios, I want to share with you a speech interaction framework, which is what you would use once you think you know where you want speech. So you've got some ideas of the features and the functionality, and now you're like, okay, I got to implement this thing. How do I make sure that it's usable? How do I make sure that it's comprehensive? How do I make sure that it's really going to work for people? And like I said, this is a combination of a lot of different people thinking this through, people who are experts in input, people who are experts in speech design, people who are expert interaction designers. We all kind of came together. Our studio has a really nice blend of different folks. And this is what we came up with. And basically, I'm going to walk you through each one of these pieces. But what it's trying to do is show you the flow of a speech interaction. And so it starts with the awareness that I can use my voice. Then I actually do something to get voice going. And then I say something, and there's this interplay with the system back and forth where I'm saying something, and the system's hopefully giving me some feedback that I, as a user, then realize I'm engaged. And then you're going to get some results. And there's a few different classes of results, and I'll go through those. You may be asking, why do I care? Why is this thing valuable? And we really use it, honestly, we use it every day. And we use it every day for a few different reasons. For this particular audience, I would say there's three things that it does. One is that it really identifies the different steps of the interaction. And so if you almost use it as a checklist, then you kind of know that you at least have something usable. It may not be what everybody wants to do with speech. It may not be the most valuable feature, but it's at least usable. So that's one. The second is that it creates these component parts, because I, as a designer, often get kind of stuck, like, you know, you try to design one piece, and then you kind of get, you're like, oh, but then this has this ripple effect, and then I'm kind of trying to think about the whole experience all at once, and I kind of lose the forest for the trees. This allows you to take one piece and say, like, I'm going to focus on awareness. I'm going to get to all these other pieces. I know I will get to them. I will eventually look at it as a holistic system and make sure that it hangs together, but it lets me kind of, like, put a little bit of blinders on and really focus, which is pretty nice. And then it also gives you a way to compare different designs. So if design A accounts for three pieces of the framework, and design B accounts for all of them, well, design B is probably a better design in its existing form. But you could probably modify design A to actually account for all the things, and then you could have really more of an apples-to-apples comparison. So it's just a nice way to make sure that you not only are being comprehensive, but that you can evaluate your designs in the most, you know, sort of effective way. So let's look at the framework in practice, and I've been talking about texting for a while, so we'll talk about it some more. So I need to tell Liz more that I'm running late. This is exactly what you saw at the very beginning, but we're going to walk it through the framework and really see how it plays out. So the first thing is that I know that I can use speech, and this is a few different ways. Windows Phone on their website does have a little thing about speech, so I might have learned about it there. If I long press on the start button, the first time that I come through, so first time experiences, note, are a good place to use for awareness, it brings up this screen that tells me the types of things that I can say. Also, there's a little question mark button, and if I press that whenever I bring up speech, I'm going to come to this screen. And there's more in here if I were to flick, you know, left and right. And then it also just might be that people at this point expect speech, right? So, I mean, Android has it, iPhone has it, Windows Phone has it. So that's another way that people have awareness, or they heard about it from somebody else. So it doesn't have to all be in your app, but certainly if there's ways that you can build it into your app, that would be good. And I'll show you a few examples of that a little bit later on. And then I kick it off, right? And you guys saw me press the long press of the start button. So that's the invocation for the global speech system. It tells me that it's listening, and it tells me it's listening in two ways. One was that little earcon that you heard, so sound effects can be really valuable, and you guys will have access to the exact same sound effects that we use as the designers of Windows Phone. People, whether they can name it or not, get pretty good at recognizing what those sound effects are. I'm sure that you all have, you know the sound of various remote controls, or you know the sounds of, you know, what happens when you're typing on your phone, or those kinds of things. So sound effects are really valuable. They can really do a lot of the heavy lifting that you might otherwise have to put into a UI. But here we also have UI, because we want people, whether they're doing this as not looking at the screen and relying completely on the sound effects, or looking at it as something where I have the phone in my hand, we also want people to know explicitly that we're listening. So we pop up this listening screen. And then, like I said, this is sort of where the interplay comes together. This is not linear anymore. There's a little bit of back and forth here. But as I speak and say, text Liz Moore, I get this little animation. Is it animated? Oh, maybe it didn't animate. Anyway, the VU meter is that sort of thing at the bottom, and it actually moves up and down, and it's reacting to volume. So this is really helpful, because even though I don't know if it's going to understand what I said, I at least know that the mic's working. And with speech, you know, if you don't give people the right feedback along the way, they start trying to troubleshoot themselves. So the more that you can help users to know where the system is and what state it's in, the less you're burdening the user to try to figure out what's going wrong, and the more that they can just focus on the task at hand. And then once it is done listening, it plays an end listening sound. So that was the sound effect that you just heard. And then it tries to understand what I said, right? And there's always this moment of, okay, well, I said something, now is it going to get it right? And so here, it lets me know that I'm texting Liz Moore, puts it on the screen, and it says it in TTS. It says out, texting Liz Moore. So again, if I'm completely eyes busy and I never look at my phone and it's in my bag, I know what's happening. And here's my result. My result is that the recipient is Liz Moore, and that I'm in the texting app now. It's navigated me there. And it even gives me a little bit of awareness, and it says, say your message. And on the screen, it says, say your message. So I know exactly what step I'm on. And now we're going to loop back through. It can be an iterative process. So now I loop back to input, and I say I'm running late. In this case, we're getting this listening sound effect. And that's because this is one where we might actually have some latency. When we do the recognition of a freeform text like that, we're going up to the cloud. So we're helping the user to know, one, that we're done listening to them and that we're doing something. We're sort of masking some of the latency by giving them some sort of feedback. And it's, you know, a little bit like a spinner, but at least I know that I'm sort of at this stage where it's trying to figure it out. And then once it does figure it out, it prints it on the screen. It says what I said, I'm running late. And then again, I get to a result. And on this result, it's again giving me choices. So it says, you can say send, add more, try again. I say send, and then I'm done. My task is complete. And so that's the framework in action. And like I said, we use it a lot because it make, especially with our partners, we have lots of different partners and they try to do lots of different things and people are trying to innovate with speech. So we're constantly making sure that folks are giving people these pieces. And I say that because it really is about that confidence. You want your user to be in lockstep with your application. If they're trying to troubleshoot your application, they're not getting their task done. So these are really that checklist to make sure that you're on track. I have a few more examples here taken from a few different apps of some key areas, so I wanted to share those as well. So for awareness, some other things that people have done is put a big button on the screen. Maluba is an application that's all about speech. It's an assistant application, and it's like, you talk to me, that is your main way of interacting. So they have this big microphone on the screen, and they also have this example of what I might say, and this example can rotate. That's a trick that we use on the global speech system. It's a trick you may want to use too. It just gives people a sense of the types of things that are available. Hey DJ has a big button, and they do it because why would I think that a music app would have speech, right? So it's like, tap to speak, we have speech. We are for an eyes busy scenario. Don't look at the screen, drop your thumb down, it will work. And then there's this link for what I can say. So it's a really good awareness story there that I know I can use speech and I can quickly find out what's available. And then there's Bing. And for Bing, what we're saying is we have a text box, you're used to a text box in search, and you can either click on that text box with your finger and enter via the keyboard, or you can touch that microphone icon and it's going to do the same thing. By putting it in the text box, we're basically saying you can fill this text box with your voice. In terms of understanding, the built-in control is this heard you say, and it says find Italian food, and that's that can be a transition from like the top page deep into the application. So this is an example of Urban Spoon, and they're using the existing control. I contrast this with another assistant application on Windows Phone called Assistant, and they chose to have this avatar. And so if they were to use the existing control, it would cover up like her face, right? Which isn't probably what they are going for in terms of the human interaction that they're trying to replicate. And so what they have is they have these two red arcs that spin around the microphone. And that provides the same, you know, sort of feedback that it's working. And then what they do is when they get a result, they actually put it in a text message kind of format, right? So it's this conversation back and forth. And I bring it up to say, you don't have to use our controls. If the controls work for you, you're going to get them for free. Jay will talk to you about that in a little bit. But you also can roll your own. This is doing the right thing. This is accounting for those pieces in the interaction. So a couple of the things that I want to talk to you about the framework. One is around disambiguation and dialogue. And I bring this up because we had those three different buckets. One is like the green, I get something, I'm cool. The second one is that we need more information. And what we're saying here is, we as a system know that you're not done. or we can't finish it for you. We need your attention and we need you to give us more information. In this case, you've asked to call AAA Insurance, and there are three people in your contacts that all work for that company, and we're saying, which of these people do you want to call? This can also happen if you have multiple items in your grammar that sound alike. So realize that it can be a somewhat disparate list. Like, I've had one where I say fine breakfast, and it's like, do you want to find breakfast or find barbecue? I don't really think that those sound that much alike, but from the system's perspective, it thought it did. So disambiguation is just one of the steps that a user might have to go through, and it's not always bad. As long as you frame disambiguation as a moving forward of the experience, this can be perfectly fine, and in many ways it is unavoidable, and so you just want to sort of finesse it and think about it as you're designing your application. Another is the no-match situation, and I'm going to show you three different versions of that because there's a few different ways that speech can not get you what you want. One of them is that we just didn't find what you wanted. So this is an example. I've asked for a contact. It's not actually in my contacts list. We're giving you two options, though, to continue. So if you have an error screen like this, a screen where we're going to have to let the user down and didn't actually fulfill the request, it's really nice if you give them some other options. This one tells me that I can say find, followed by something else, or I can tap the speak button and try again. Hey DJ wants to keep you in their app, and they just say, didn't catch that. And the idea is you're just supposed to say it again. And in fact, often it's not the user's fault that speech doesn't work, and if they say it again, it will likely work the second time. So giving people a really quick way to do that can be a really good design. And then this last one is in the case that there's a network error, and this is a screen that's part of the UI that's built in, but at least it lets the user know, like, I'm sorry, I'm trying, but I have no network connectivity, so you're kind of, you know, stuck. Right, but at least it's being informative. It's not sort of being opaque about it. It's nice that it's being pretty transparent here. And so I've already alluded to these, but the wrong things will happen with speech. Speech is a non-deterministic technology. There are errors. Our speech echo is pretty good, but you have to account for the error cases too. And this is one of the things that we see a lot of folks when they're new to speech design. They just kind of think about the happy path, because who wouldn't want to do that? But it's really good to think about these other paths as well. They're really important. And the way that you, the more that you design those and think about them as integral to your experience, the better the overall user experience is going to be, because they're not going to feel like tack-ons. They're not going to feel like, you know, sort of out of place. And they're going to feel like they were just part of the experience. The more that they feel integrated, the less they feel like a road bump or a kind of crossroads that I have to get past. And so a few things to keep in mind. One, allow for people to recover quickly. Most of the time, it's not the user's fault, so just, you know, let them get right back into it. Make the feedback constructive, but not overbearing. Sometimes the other thing that we see people do is they're like, oh, the user doesn't know what to do. Let me tell them everything. Sometimes that's overkill, right? So if you're in a state where one of three things is possible, sure, you could read out all those three things. If you're in a state where 100 things or even 10 things are possible, reading all those out is probably going to be annoying. Again, because the user probably didn't do anything wrong to begin with. So either do something that's more ambiguous, like try again, or offer like an example of one thing that they might say, but don't assume that they don't know what to say. There are many times when they said exactly the right thing and we just needed a second go at it. And so the idea here is, you know, you don't want to take people down a path that they didn't want to be on too often, but you also don't want to keep asking them lots of questions that they don't really need to answer, because you are probably going to take them down the right path. So this is a dance. I don't have a hard and fast on this one. It's a tightrope that you walk, but just kind of think about that. Don't be afraid to move forward if there's also a way to get back. And that's what I have on this one. You know, in the case of an error, you want to continue to give people a chance to repair. And so this is our text messaging one. And we are just acknowledging that texting can be kind of hard. It's a really big dictation grammar. We might get it wrong. So you can send, which is valuable. You can add more, which is also valuable. Or you can try again. We integrated it all right in there. The try again is the oops, we got it wrong. It's not some separate state. It's just all part of the same thing, but it's allowing that quick recovery. You can also be, as you're moving people along, just give them a cancel button. We're about to go do a search for Yerba Buena Gardens. If that wasn't what the user wanted, they can just tap cancel and they can try again. So allowing for a quick exit. And then taking the user as far as possible. So for Cocktail Flow, all that they support at the top is naming of an application. If I say Cocktail Flow, I'd like to find some vodka drinks, they can't do that for me. But what they can do is tell me that they heard Cocktail Flow, give me the option to speak, give me the option to open the app, and given the option to see all the different things that I could say. Like now as a user, I don't feel like I'm totally stuck. I feel like I have a lot of different options to figure out what went wrong. So this is a way for letting users to sort of troubleshoot that. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about is confirmations. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but there is the sense that you should confirm a lot because you don't know if you got it right. You're pretty sure you got it right. The confidence score was pretty good, but you're not totally sure. Implicit confirmations are your friend. They're really, really great because they basically say, I'm going to do this action. If you do nothing, I will continue to do this action. If you don't like what I'm doing, you can cancel. And so this way, if it's wrong, the user can quickly get out. If it's right, they don't have to do anything. They don't have to say yes or no, and it goes on its merry way. Explicit confirmations are where you're asking people to make an action before something's going to happen, and that's for irreversible actions or things that are really hard to recover from. So deleting something, sure, ask them yes, no. It'd be really bad if you deleted it accidentally. Sending a message to somebody, there's no way that I can recall that text message, so yes, ask me if I want to send it. But use them sparingly, seriously. You don't need to give a yes, no, or explicitly confirm everything. There are a lot of other tricks to get around that, and the back button can also be really valuable, because if you use that, that's another sort of reflexive thing that people can start to get used to. So with that, I'm gonna hand it over to Jay, and he's gonna talk to you in a little bit more technical detail.
Awesome, thank you, Meg. I predict at least 5 of you are gonna have an old fashioned later tonight. After this talk. So Meg went through when speech is useful, and then she talked about an interaction paradigm that you should think about prior to coding in terms of how to anticipate or ensure that that interaction is going to be usable. And what I want to do is we've heard from a number of developers who've gone down the speech path, specifically on Windows Phone, and I want to talk about some considerations of the technology that you should think about to ensure that usable experience and to hopefully lead you down a good design. But, the first place you're going to want to start, and again, this is specific to Windows Phone, but you can, yeah. So you want to think about what are those key problems or high-value scenarios that your app is solving for. This typically isn't like 5 or 10 things, although it could be, but it's usually like 1 or 2 or 3 problems that your app is really good at solving. In the case of Cocktail Flow, once again, we have the old-fashioned. But, I actually discovered this app because my wife was like, we should have an old-fashioned, and I was like, I know what the drink is. If we've had it before, I just don't remember what goes into it. And so very quickly, without having to do a whole lot with my phone, I can press the start button, say, Cocktail Flow old-fashioned, get the information I need, and go about my way. And so Hey DJ is another great case where controlling music is that one, we call this like a use case, right? And this is one of those core use cases that you can take advantage of. So for Windows Phone, the place to start here is under the voice commands capability. And so there's a couple of things that you should understand about the technology that will help you implement it better. Again, this is integration of your app with the long press of the start button. And so the code and logic is going to be centered around onloaded and on navigation handling. There's a lot of great information out there about implementing voice commands that are on the web. So we'll have some links for that later. But essentially, where your design is going to be important in terms of that user experience is going to be around this voice command definition file. And this is an XML that Microsoft devised. And I'll talk a little bit about that in a second. I'll show you an example. But in the context of voice commands, speech recognition kind of, you can think about it like this, and this is pretty typical of most speech recognition systems, but you have 2 inputs into the system. You have the audio, which you really don't have a whole lot of control over, and then you have a set of grammars or phrases to listen for. And the way speech recognition works, it's basically like a search problem, and it says, hey, does this audio, does it match anything in this list? And so the thing to understand is that your list of phrases that you're registering for your app are actually competing with a number of other grammars or lists on the system. That's call contact, that's a system level grammar. There's also grammars for texting and finding. And then of course, any other third party apps as well who might have their phrases registered with the system are also gonna be on there. And I'll talk about why that's important because there's gonna be some constraints in the voice command space that you should be aware of. And again, this is always local. That's also another question people have, is it on device or not? In the context of voice commands, it's always going to be on device. So let me show you an example using actually a sample that you can download today on the web. All right, can you guys see this? Should I make it bigger? Bigger. How big? Let me hear a number. Twice as big? 19? Ooh, should we see if it can scale to 19? Awesome, okay. So here we have, this is a VCD or voice command definition file. And this is an alarm clock. This is an alarm clock app. It's put out by the SDK team in Windows Phone. And basically, there are four tasks or four main scenarios that this app is solving for. It's turning an alarm on, it's turning it off, it's asking what time the alarm is set for, and then it's setting the alarm. And you can see that within this file, those actions or tasks are mapped to this concept of a command. So I'm gonna skip over exactly what everything is doing, but from a conceptual design level, you're starting from these four main actions, and then you're implementing them inside these command tags. So you can see there's an alarm set on. Here we have an alarm set off. And then we have, when's my alarm set for, and set alarm to 7:30. So these are your, you can think of these like tasks again. There's another concept that you should be aware of inside this file, which is this phrase list. And this, you can think of this like a slot or an entity. And this is where you have some flexibility to programmatically update the kinds of things that are being listened for. In the text example that I almost said Liz, she keeps saying, don't say Liz, that Meg was showing off, you know, that call Liz or text Liz, the Liz is that, you can think of that like the entity or the slot. And really this was built and optimized for certain scenarios like around favorites or contacts or maybe items saved in a user's content store or ISO storage. You could think of it like maybe their channels or things they've subscribed to, but it's a limited set. And I'll talk just a second about some of those limitations. You want to? Great. And so what's cool about this is when you implement voice commands, this is specifically voice commands, you get that interaction paradigm for free. So Meg talked about having this awareness, the invocation, the input, the acknowledgement. All of this, you don't have to spend a whole lot of time to get this going. Now there is a caveat there, and in terms of awareness, I'm curious, how many people are aware of the system level help for speech on Windows Phone? Okay, so you can see we've got some work to do, but this is definitely a gap, and it's not something that people know about. There's a bunch of places in the system that will lead users down to discover this, but what we've seen is that they don't know a whole lot about it.
Jay, just to play off that though, what is nice, sorry, is that on the listening screen, these examples that are rotating through can actually highlight your application if you use voice commands. So even if people don't go into the help, they're going to, over time, start seeing some of those. And you can see that, I think it's Cocktail Flow's advertising a Cuba Libre there. So it's letting me know, oh yeah, I can say a drink name.
Right, and so this is just an example. When you plug into the system, your app will be sort of sprinkled in a variety of places in terms of letting users know that they can use it. Oh, not yet. Sorry. So, let's
user
see.
Error.
It's all good. So again, for voice commands, really think about like what you put into awareness may be your biggest gap. And Hey DJ tries to overcome some of this by actually implementing a what can I say. Also in the about for their app, they also talk about, hey, this is a reminder, you can use voice commands. Here's how you do it. They actually have he puts a little logo in the about that talks about pressing the start button for even people who don't know about that. Also, because your voice command definition file is just one of many grammars on the overall system, there are some constraints. And so you can only have 25 maximum commands, and you're limited to 2,000 phrase list items across all of those commands. So if you're really wanting to say contoso, find, and then you know, X, where X can be one of 5,000 things, I'll give you a hint about how you can go about implementing that, but you likely don't want to do that via voice commands. Or you may just want to take the top 2,000 and register those. Again, recognition is all on device. And there's another interesting thing, Meg, if you want to switch back. Mm-hmm. There's a command prefix element. So we talked about, you know, don't make users say really awkward strings that may not be language friendly. Well, that's not always possible for apps these days, right? I mean, underscores and exclamation marks are replacing ones. Even if you look at this SDK voice alarm clock, WP8CS, and I tried it, you can actually say that and then say turn alarm on, and sometimes it works. There's a functionality at the top of this screen called a command prefix. And what that allows you to do as a developer is give sort of a friendly, more language-friendly way for your user to say that app. So if I jump over here to the emulator, here's the app running on the screen. Let's see if this works. I'm going to go ahead and use the audio from my device. Alarm, oops, I didn't hear it come out. Yep, it's pretty low. Can you guys hear it? Alarm clock, turn alarm on.
Turning alarm on.
Alarm is now set for 00.
Ah, and did you guys hear that too? It said alarm is now set for 00. You guys hear that? Okay. Thank you. You can turn that audio down now. And so that brings me to my next point. Liz, if you can jump over. Thanks. Is that there are some capabilities when the user is already inside your app. And so what happened was I used voice command to jump into the app, and then the app actually confirmed using in-app speech, confirmed turning that on. And so this is great, as Meg talked about, when it's just quicker to use voice rather than tapping on the screen. It might be usable actually for some in-app navigation, depending on what kind of app you have. Really great examples of in-app speech are texting and the Bing app. Some of the voice-centric apps as well. You'll find like there's a Wikipedia app, and I know Newegg offers this, and there's a couple of other apps where it's just easier to press the mic and then say what it is you're wanting to input. And here, now this is distinct. A lot of people, I think, are confused, and rightly so, because it can be confusing. But voice commands are specific to the long press of the start button. And then when you're inside of your app, you're going to want to leverage recognition and synthesis. And here you're going to have a lot more flexibility for those back and forth interactions. So you can have, you can actually, with speech synthesis, you can be doing more robust prompting or question asking. And so here, your logic too, like there's going to be a lot more flexibility in terms of where you handle this code. What's really important is that whereas we have the limitations for voice commands for those 25 commands and this concept of a phrase list item, inside of your application, there's lots of mechanisms for actually listening for those phrases. I'll talk about them in a minute here. The speech predefined grammar, this is where you can just tell your app says basically, hey, I want to listen for either a short message or a web search-like query, and this is where there's a network connection. If you have a set of items that aren't that content or resourcing is actually in like a list format of strings, we make it really easy to add that list to the recognizer, and then you can just ask the user to distinguish between those lists. And then there's also what's going to be most interesting and most powerful is this concept of an SRGS XML grammar. And this is a W3C standard, and there's a lot of flexibility there in terms of what to listen for and recursion and repetitions and all sorts of things. And so, in contrast to the context of voice commands or speech recognition in the context of voice commands, in-app speech is very similar. But some of the key distinction here is that you're not competing with other grammars on the system. And so that's going to be the biggest gain there. Also, you've got the differences in terms of how you specify what to listen for, either through the predefined grammars, simple lists, or using custom SRGS. If you are using the predefined grammars, again, there is a network connection required. That's going to be an important consideration for your design. However, with simple lists and SRGS, all of that recognition is done locally. Okay, so let me just show you, I'll jump over to my screen here and show you an example of a little app that I wrote. And I'll make this available as well up on the MSDN after this talk. But basically, here's a sample app. Maybe it'd be helpful if I showed you what it does first. Well, no, I'm not going to show you what it does first. Basically, you tap to load a grammar, and then you can tap the microphone button on the application bar to get a recognition result. And so what I was trying to exemplify is, well, you know, what's a grammar that might be a little bit harder to do or slightly impossible to do inside of a voice command? And so I took this concept of a PIN number, just to spite Meg, who said, you know, you may not want to have input of really sensitive information, but let's just say you do for whatever reason. I know in Argentina they have the kiosks, you know, in some of the banks, and so like you have your own privacy. So maybe there it's appropriate to actually speak your PIN number. Let me go ahead and bolster this as well. Sorry about that. So here you can see a grammar. Again, this is a W3C standard, and this is listening for input of a digit sequence. And so this is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, and I've done 0 and 0 as well in terms of recognition. And there's this concept of semantics, and I'm not going to go into too much detail here, but note that, you know, with about 50 lines of XML, I can recognize quite a few different sequences of digit input. And so I'll jump over to the app here, and I'll show you what that is. Okay, so it's loaded pinnumber.grxml. Normally I would just, you know, hide that from the user. And I'll go ahead and tap this. Can anyone want to volunteer their PIN number? Really? No, Sid? No, okay, I'm just going to make up a number. You guys don't believe me, do you? Okay. 6854.
Heard you say 6854.
Great. Anybody else want to try a number? 731. 7310.
Heard you say 7310.
It's 4 to 6. It's 4 to 6. So I could also do 6. So I could do 73105. Let's try that. 70315.
Say 70315.
Okay, so this is an example of having a lot of flexibility. Is it quick? Yeah, this should. The question was, what about recognizing O's and zeros? So the way that the grammar is written is that's correct. 7005.
Heard you say 7005.
Now, I'm not showing it here. I actually, oh gosh, you guys make me want to just show code. I do have some code to show. Basically, what you would do is you would actually, your logic would be based on what we call the semantics for that. So actually, if I uncomment this, all right, let me build it real quick. We'll deploy it. So what was it, 7005? 7005.
Heard you say 7005.
So what you see here is that there's a tag value, so both the O and the 0 are associated with the same tag, which is a JavaScript semantic. So you can do some robust, you could basically map lots of different phrases to a single value. So this would be really helpful if you want to like localize speech, for example. Like if you wanted to localize this grammar, you wouldn't necessarily, numbers are a little weird because we do normalization, but let's say, you know, my app could just go ahead and work on 7005 rather than 7005. Yeah, it's a good question. And the other great thing that you get, I don't know if you guys noticed, we'll go ahead and switch over, Meg. I showed you that demo enough. But basically, you get all that interaction for free, right? So, and what's interesting is I implemented the speech recognizer UI class inside this app. And so after instantiating it, I can add a grammar to it, and then essentially I call recognize with UI async, and I get that input, and I get that acknowledgement for free, essentially. And I also get that confirmation screen. Now, as Meg talked about, you may not want to have that confirmation screen every time, right? And there is some flexibility, too, to modify that speech recognizer UI to modify the readout on that as well. And so, and that's this part at the bottom here. So I guess what I'm saying here is that as you start to explore in-app speech, think about, or I would recommend starting off with the Speech Recognizer UI class, just to sort of get familiar. That way you ensure that you're leveraging the paradigm that Meg talked about, and it can quickly tell you whether or not your grammar is working and the overall task flow. Okay. Now, what if you're writing a native app for Windows Phone, or you have a voice-centric app, or you're having a game or something, you really don't want that speech overlay? Well, the Speech Recognizer UI class actually encompasses a speech recognizer object. And so you can also instantiate that class, or instantiate that object, and that's a great way to build your own, if you want to build your own. So I guess the point here is you will have to build your own interaction paradigm if you directly leverage the Speech Recognizer class. And this is where you're going to want to take the most care to think about all those pieces that Meg talked about. Now, there's some things that you should know as well. There are the icons for the mic, for example, that actually comes with the SDK for Windows Phone 8.0. And so that's a great thing to just automatically take and leverage. There's also earcons in there as well. These are sound files. So the listening sound and the done listening sound, those are earcons that you can leverage inside your app. Also, this is going to be where you're going to want to spend the most time validating those pieces. So Meg talked about using the paradigm to sort of evaluate different designs. And so really, if you do have a speech recognizer class, don't dismiss having people try it out and really see if they can accomplish that task. So there's a couple of other gotchas to think about. Just keep in mind that it's really easy to leverage the service to ask a user to input a short message dictation, which is supported across 7 languages. There's 5 languages that are supported for web search. But again, there is a network connection required. So if you have that treasure hunting app and they're on the other side of Mount Rainier, it may not be the most appropriate context for that grammar. Large custom grammars can take time, about a second per megabyte. So I was playing with like an 80,000 city-state grammar, and physically this was a very large file. It was like 8 to 10 megabytes. And so when I went to load that onto the grammar, it takes about 8 seconds. So keep that in mind in terms of that invocation piece that Meg talked about. You don't want to have a user like be able to invoke it and then have it sort of like wait while it's loading, right? So here's where you're going to want to preload it ahead of time with this preload async, and then maybe enable that invocation point. Continuous recognition is not a supported feature for Windows Phone either, because people think about scenarios around, oh, can I just, you know, set the phone down and just wait and listen, sort of like the Xbox does. And today, the way the system is where it's at today, you do need to have that invocation by the end user. So after 30 seconds, that operational timeout, and you have to restart it. And also watch out for overgeneration. So if you go down the path of authoring your own SRGS grammar, this is where there's a number of tools that you can get for free via the Microsoft Speech Platform SDK version 11. And there's some links from bing.com/dev. But if you install that, it's for a redistributable server speech platform. But there's a number of command line executables that are included to give you detailed information about a grammar that you author. And so I'll just go ahead and switch over and show you a little example of that. And there's one tool specifically that I use a lot that I really like. It's called Phrase Generator. And basically what it does is it takes in a GRXML and then it outputs a list of all the phrases that are that will match that grammar. And so if I run it on that PIN number grammar, and then open it up. Now this is, I changed the semantics. So normally, I know you guys are sharp, you'd probably catch me on this, but this was from a grammar a few hours ago before I changed it. But basically the user can say 1111, 1112, 1113, and it goes all the way down. And so there's essentially, you know, there's a lot of phrases. This is a really big file. And I think what this highlights is the power of that GRXML. It's a very small file. And in fact, it compiles very fast internally. So that latency is going to be a negligible concern for you. But you can see when I ran this tool, it said there are 14,641 things a user could say and have it come back and recognize. So that's cool. And overgeneration is a problem that happens where you try to build this complex SRGS, and all of a sudden, you've got, like, you're listening for Mr. and Mrs., and then you're listening for a name, and then you're listening for a please, thank you, and all of a sudden, like, without even knowing it, the engine is listening for something like Mr. and Mrs. Jones, thank you, please, yes, thank you, like something like that, right? And you're like, you don't want that to come back, because if it does happen inadvertently, if there's some extra noise or something, it's just it's too much of a surface area, of an unnecessary surface area. And lastly, I've got one last slide. One last sort of thing to keep in mind. Consider whether or not, for your Windows Phone app, whether or not you should be combining voice commands with in-app speech. The texting app is a great example where this is essentially what's happening underneath the hood. So text Liz Moore is launching the app, taking the user into the app, and then immediately there's that in-app speech capability that takes over and says, say your message, and then ask for input, and then allows the user to send or append and do these things. And so, you know, you can imagine it may be awkward if you're running to your car and you say, text Liz Moore, and then all of a sudden you're taken in the app and you're expected to sort of stop and type. And it's sort of, this is what we call a voice cliff. And lastly, I know that there's been a lot of, we've actually had feature requests since the launch of Windows 8 to be able to have a short message or web search immediately followed by the app name. So where you'd want to say, Contoso inventory, you know, Contoso note taker, tell John I'm going to be 5 minutes late. And the system doesn't allow for that today. The constraints are that it's always local. So the way to handle that is to have a smaller set of commands to launch the user into the app, and then have the app take over and complete the task using those network grammars. Voice cliff, yes. Voice cliff, the question was to clarify a voice cliff. This is sort of a user design term where the user is trying to accomplish a task with speech and has to stop and switch to a different modality. And some of the early Xbox releases with speech, I don't know if you guys noticed, but there were some apps on the Xbox dashboard where you'd start off with speech and then you'd have to configure something with, you'd get up, you know, it's just kind of, that's a great example of a voice cliff that's out there today.
So we're going to wrap up and hopefully get a few questions in. Basically, we shared with you when speech is useful. We've shared with you that interaction framework. Please go use it. And Jay gave you some considerations. And then if you click forward, there's a ton of resources at bing.com/dev. And that's where you're going to find out new information, too, as we continue to release additional
capabilities.
So we have, unfortunately, only about 3 minutes left, but we're happy to take questions. If you could go to the mics, though, that would be lovely. And then we won't repeat them.
Any ability to kind of compete with the native text call keywords?
No. In fact, there's Travis is one of our experts here. He can tell me all the different nuances. The high-level story is that you're not supposed to do that. And there is some warnings on the website, like, hey, if you try to do this, we may pull your app. There is sort of disambiguation built into that voice command system. So if you have multiple apps that like sound the same, or two Contoso apps, the user is actually prompted to say, which one did you want? They would have to have the same apps and the same commands as well, typically for us to sort of not know where to go. I think for call and text, Travis, if this is correct, we'll actually default to call or text. Yeah, the system will win for those particular keywords. I'm not going to tell you how to spoof it, though, if that's what you're asking.
I think we can go over here.
Do you have any suggestions for security? Say, for example, a text comes in, ask if you want to read it out loud, and your passenger says, yes, go ahead and read it.
Right. Yeah, this always comes up. And I think one is just to be aware that that situation may happen. I think the tact that we've generally taken is that there is a social contract that people undergo and they sort of manage it. So you're right that there's these cases, and this is on Xbox all the time. They're like, oh, somebody's going to say, go home and, you know, mess up my game. And, you know, right now we're not doing anything that's really paying attention to this specific speaker. I actually don't know in a car in terms of where the microphone is. It might just be better for the driver. I would assume it probably is. But it's more of a social problem for the people to mitigate at the moment. There isn't really a technological solution.
So is all recognition done locally? It's the only thing that comes from the web is the various grammars that are going to be recognized?
So it's the there's a speech predefined grammar has two different enumerations. There's a dictation and web search. If you load those onto the speech recognizer, that recognition will happen in the cloud. Everything else is local, including voice commands.
Right. And the dictation one is really what we use in the texting app. So if you want to get a feel for it, that's the same exact thing
right.
You would get. And the web one is what we use for Bing. So you would get that exact same grammar if you use that predefined grammar.
Right. So if
the yes.
What?
Yes. Dictation yeah. And web are in the cloud.
I mean, it says that you're using a predefined grammar. We're trying to, that it's a little obfuscated, but essentially both your audio is being passed up to the cloud, the recognition is happening with that grammar, and then the result is being sent back to the app via the API.
And what about localization? Which language is supported?
Right.
Yeah, so there's for Windows Phone, there are 15 locales. If you go to bing.com/dev, there should be some links in there to that. But if you want to just look quickly, you can look on your Windows Phone 8 phone and go to Settings, Speech, and
Language.
You'll see a list. There's a long list that you can look at and to see what languages are supported. The trick, though, is that the users are going to, if you're targeting to do the capability for language that's not typical to your market, a user is going to have to install that first to get that working in your app. But you can see from your app what's installed.
I think we're out of time, but we can certainly hang out afterwards and take additional questions. Yeah.
Okay, just come over there.
Yeah, we'll hang out for as long as
you
guys have questions.
Coming.
So thank you.